Lowe's has the Labor Day deals you need to give your home a new look. Buy one, get one free select interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Then, add the final touch with 2 for $8 on select 2.5 or 3-quart mums. Refresh your home and save big while doing it. Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 9/3. Mums offer in-store only. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for details.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Earth Orbit and Beyond. Dr. Space, David Livingston, and this is Hotel Mars. And we're delighted to welcome the esteemed correspondent for all Earth Orbit and Beyond launches, Eric Berger at Ars Technica. But most importantly, Eric Berger, the author of a wonderful book about the early days of SpaceX and Elon Musk, Liftoff. This is the story of the rocket before the rocket we're talking about today. But it is a wild story. I've accused Eric of making the dramatic parts up. He didn't. It's all real, including going out to Kwajalein in the Western Pacific and testing in what used to be a battle zone in order to build a rocket that got everybody convinced that they can do this. Well, indeed they can. However, we're going to begin this Hotel Mars episode not with SpaceX at Boca Chica, but with SLS, delayed from its ambition to launch earlier in the month. It now has a new date at the end of the month. Eric, a very good evening to you. Thank you for joining us. What is the status of the SLS right now? I understand it didn't go back to the VAB. Have they fixed what they doubted, and are they ready for the next attempt? Good evening to you, Eric.
Well, good evening, John and David. Thank you. They think they're getting close to being ready for an attempt on September 27th. They still have to do a couple of things in preparation for that. First of all, as you said, they fixed the hydrogen line where it connects to the rocket at an interface called a quick disconnect that had leaked during the last launch attempt on September 3rd. And so they think that they've fixed that. They're going to perform a fueling test probably in about a week from now. They haven't set a date yet where they're going to fill up the whole rocket and see essentially if there's hydrogen and oxygen leaks. They're primarily concerned about the hydrogen, liquid hydrogen. And if it passes that test, and if they get permission from the Eastern Range on the lifetime of the batteries on board the rocket with something called the flight termination system, then they will press ahead with the launch attempt on the September 27th.
September 27th. David, you have a question.
If the range doesn't go along, how long does it take to redo the flight termination system? What kind of delay would that cause?
It would be a significant delay because those batteries can only be serviced in the vehicle assembly building. So they would have to stand down from a launch attempt, spend about 10 days securing the rocket to roll back to the VAB, and then probably would spend a month or so in the VAB, and then, you know, they're 10 days to 2 weeks getting back out to the pad. So I think they would really struggle to hit their next launch window, which is the second half of October. So if they don't get permission from the range, I think we're potentially looking at a November launch date for Artemis 1.
And let me interpret the range, because I have an idea of what's going on here, but I'm not certain. What does it mean, the range? Who is the range? Why do they need permission?
Yeah, it's a bit confusing. So anytime you have a launch site in the United States where you're sending off rockets, it's managed typically by one branch of the U.S. military. For example, you mentioned Kwajalein earlier. That's the U.S. Army. In Florida actually is falls under the Eastern Range. And so that includes Cape Canaveral and Kennedy Space Center. And there's a U.S. Space Force Space Launch Delta 45 that manages that. And their job is to ensure that anything launching from there does not affect civilian areas. So every rocket that launches is equipped with something called a flight termination system, essentially a small bomb that can be remotely detonated if the rocket veers off course. And so those FTS or flight termination systems have to be independent of all the other materials in the rockets. They have their own power supply. And at issue here is that NASA had certified the batteries on this flight termination system for the SLS rocket. Sorry, that's a mouthful. But those batteries were rated for 20 days. They're trying to get an extension to 40 or even 50 days to accommodate this longer launch window.
So this is the system that would destroy the rocket if it goes awry at the launch. And right now, the 20 to 40 days, is that profound in your experience, Eric?
It's a significant extension for sure. I'm hearing that it's likely that NASA will get that permission from the range. It hasn't been publicly stated yet, but I think that's likely to occur.
David?
So I take it they can't recharge the batteries. It's a whole replacement job. Is that what happens?
You know, when they roll back to the VAV, I'm not sure whether they recharge or replace or just go in and look at the batteries and test them and see if they're okay. I mean, there's the vast likelihood is that these batteries, which had a 20-day lifetime from the, you know, for certification, probably could last 6 months. Right. But they just want to go in and make sure everything's okay.
We're leaving Florida and we're headed to Texas, the great state of Texas at Boca Chica on the border. The testing going on for the ambition to launch Starship on top of Super Heavy. These are two different systems that are put together in some fantastic fashion. The last I saw, a random report that come to me from a big fan of SpaceX, is that they set the grass on fire. What did they do, Eric?
Well, they were working to test Super Heavy. That's the first stage of this launch system. It's a massive, massive rocket with 33 Raptor rocket engines, very powerful engines. And they've already fired one, and this time they were attempting to fire three, and they ignited two, and the third engine, for whatever reason, didn't appear to ignite. But they, as part of the test, which went well, it shut off, and then it started a grass fire, which burned for quite a while because they couldn't get out to the pad to. You know, there was still fluids on the vehicle, propellant and so forth. And so they couldn't just rush fire trucks out there to put the fire out for a few hours.
So they lit up the Texas sky. Is that what they did? And is this a significant or just colorful?
I think it's colorful because you see these grass fires around other launch sites. You know, it didn't really threaten their extensive ground systems there. And so the fact that the rocket itself appeared to do very well with this test, and, you know, that at this point, they're really just making sure that the tanks and all the pressures inside the vehicle, when they ignite a couple of engines, that this all, you know, doesn't blow up essentially.
David?
How many engines have they been able to test simultaneously so far? Do you know the answer?
Yeah, two, because they were attempting to ignite three and only two ignited. So I think that's the new number, but they have been conducting sort of more tests and, you know, sometime this week, they may go for three or five or seven or something like that. It'll be a gradual buildup, but they're back out there. They've been working toward their next static fire test of the Super Heavy rocket.
Now, when they test a rocket, an engine, and it performs well, do they put a chalk mark on the side of it? We'll use this one. Is that what happens?
No, it's really about, yes, they are testing the engines, but all of these engines have been tested already at the SpaceX's facility in McGregor, Texas. So they build the Raptors in California, they ship them to Texas and Central Texas to test them. And if they go through the test campaign there, then they get shipped down to South Texas and put on the Super Heavy rocket. So it's more about the plumbing inside the Super Heavy rocket itself, the propellant tanks, all the feed lines, everything you need to ignite engines. And it's just a kind of a gradual process. It's the same thing when they did the Falcon 9. The first time they ignited the Falcon 9, it was with one engine, then three, and then five, seven, and then finally nine.
I see. So this testing process has to do with the simultaneity of the engines the day of launch. And I understand all 33 do not go off together. There are milliseconds or gaps between them. They're firing in sequence. Is that correct, Eric?
That's correct. And actually, that's pretty common with rockets. The Space Launch System engines are all ignited within like one and then a couple hundred milliseconds later, the next one, there's four of them. And they sort of, it's a staggered start. Yeah.
David?
In terms of being able to do this, do you think there's any truth to holding up the launch license until SLS flies, that they want SLS to go before any demo of Starship?
I don't think there's any truth to that. NASA has no oversight in the FAA launch licensing process. Every time I've interacted with FAA officials, they've been pretty straightforward. And in fact, I think they've been reasonably accommodating of what SpaceX has tried to do. You know, back when they were doing their initial Starship test flights in South Texas, these are suborbital flights. You know, the FAA was having trouble sort of getting people down there on time to issue licenses and things like that. So they're actually trying to open a field office there to accommodate SpaceX. I don't buy any of that conspiracy. It's just technically Starship and Super Heavy are not ready to go. And I think when they are, the launch license will follow.
The mission for SLS is to circumnavigate the moon. There's a much more modest ambition for Starship Heavy and a Starship and Super Heavy, which is to orbit once, not even once, and then fall to Earth. Is that correct, Eric?
That's correct. The initial flight for Starship, as planned, would launch from South Texas and go around about two-thirds, three-quarters of the planet, and then the Starship upper stage would re-enter over Hawaii or land near Hawaii in the ocean.
And
you look at this core stage that is on the launch pad in Florida, and I was in Michoud assembly factory facility in Louisiana in 2014, seeing when they were building the barrels for these tanks. And so this rocket on the pad, literally parts of it have been built for almost a decade. The engines themselves are 3 decades old. So it's, you know, this rocket in South Texas is less than a year old.
So we're looking at old man rocket and baby rocket. Okay, Eric Berger, he is Ars Technica's correspondent for these launches. We're waiting for them excitedly. He's also the author of Liftoff, which is the desperate early days that launched SpaceX. Indeed it is, a wonderful story. David Livingston, Dr. Space of the Space Show. This is Hotel Mars, Episode N. I'm John Bash.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.